I don't know about you, I'm still out of breath from the Father Abraham dance. Well, there once was a little boy who grew up in the mountains. His mother had not been married when he was born, and the criticism directed at her also hit him. His schoolmates learned from their parents how to ridicule, and the boy learned to stay to himself at lunch and recess so that the insults wouldn't strike too hard. Even more difficult were trips to town when he could feel the looks and the stares and the whispers and the questions, "I wonder who his dad is." When he was about 12, a new pastor came to the little community church in town. People talked of how great he was, and so the boy wanted to go hear for himself. He started going to the little church, and he was fascinated by the pastor, but he was always careful to slip away before the service ended so that nobody would notice him. One Sunday, though, he was so caught up in the service that he forgot to slip out before it was over. And as he turned to leave, he felt a big hand on his shoulder. And he turned around, and it was the pastor. Pastor said, "Who are you, son? Whose boy are you? What's your name? Who's your parents?" Well, his young heart sank at the questions. But then the preacher went on. "Wait a minute. I know who you are. The family resemblance is unmistakable. Ben, you are a child of God." I love this story because it reminds me of how Jesus paid special attention to the outcasts and the nobodies of his society. Jesus saw human beings. He saw people. Most people feared the leopards, and whenever they entered the village, they would have to say, "Unclean, unclean," so that people could step away. But Jesus welcomed them, even touched them. When most people hated the tax collectors, Jesus invited Matthew to be one of his 12 disciples. And he even stopped a parade under Zacchaeus' tree to go have dinner at his house. When a woman was taken in the act of adultery, and the scribes and the priests were surrounding her to stone her, Jesus said, "Those who are without sin cast the first stone." Everywhere we turn in the Gospels, we find Jesus looking out for the outcasts and welcoming them in his presence. Today, we heard Dick read the scriptures, perhaps maybe a familiar story for you, Abraham and Sarah, our heroes of faith, the ones from which we have come, God's chosen people, the ones he promised that their descendants would be more numerous than the stars. Sometimes, though, we may get the impression that the God of the Old Testament was busy selecting people of Israel and the chosen ones and rejecting everybody else. We almost get the picture of a fraternity-type God where he would choose some and some would be out. For example, Cain's offering was accepted, but not Abel's. Noah and his family were selected to survive the flood. Israel was chosen, but no other tribes of the world. And in our story, Isaac was chosen, but not Ishmael. But today's scripture also shows us a picture of God more consistent with that of Jesus. While God may have had a chosen people, God is also the God of the outcasts. Traditionally, I have read this story through the eyes of Abraham and Sarah. But today, I want to tell the story through the most vulnerable character, Hagar. One of my classes in seminary taught me to read the old familiar stories of the Bible through the eyes of less common characters, and then reflect, how does the story change? What do we learn about God's heart? So Hagar, she's an Egyptian slave girl and Sarah's personal slave, which would have given her a little bit of status among the other slaves. It was custom in those days that the wife could bring to the marriage her own personal maid. Hagar was in Sarah's protection and could not be sexually exploited, unlike the other slave girls who could be taken advantage of. Hagar was responsible to look after her mistress, to do domestic work, and serve as a wet nurse. But as we know, Sarah couldn't have any children, even though God promised that she would have. So Sarah decides to take matters in her own hands and give Hagar to Abraham. She thought, perhaps this is how we will have a family. Scholars have said that surrogate motherhood was probably a custom back then, but it wasn't voluntary. Hagar had no choice in the matter. Her life, her body, her reproductive system was in the hands of Sarah. When Hagar realized she was pregnant, she looked at contempt on her mistress. Of course she would. Hagar was in the protection of Sarah, and Sarah betrayed her. Sarah gets angry and turns her anger on Abram and says, "Punish her." Abram, being a smart man, decides to stay out of that. Says, no, you deal with her. She's yours. So whatever Sarah did to Hagar, we don't know, but it must have been pretty bad because Hagar ran away. If you ever think your life is messy, just read the Bible. Pregnant, scared, abused, Hagar runs away. She runs into the wilderness, unprotected, yet at least away from her oppressors. In those days, you couldn't survive in the desert without a tribe with you, especially if you were a woman. But somewhere in the wilderness, God finds her by a spring of water. And this is the part of the story where we find an amazing turn of events. God knows Hagar. God calls her by name. Hagar's just a slave. She's nothing in society. She's invisible. She's just property. Yet, God knows her. God says, "Hagar, what are you doing here?" You know that when somebody knows your name, when somebody recognizes you, it usually means they know you. They might even like you. In the profession of teaching, we know that how important it is to know the names of our students. It makes them feel welcome, wanted, respected, valued, special. As a campus minister at UMD, I see students every week. And it is a research statistic in college that if a professor or a faculty person or a staff member or a campus minister knows a student's name, that student is more likely to succeed in college. When students feel invisible, their education suffers. Hagar is so taken aback that God knows her name, that God sees her, that God spoke to her, that she names God, El Roi, meaning God of seeing, or the God who sees. She's finally been seen. She's not just a body to produce children. She's not just a slave. She's a real person that feels deeply and suffers. So as we read the story through Hagar's eyes, we find slavery, poverty, ethnicity, sexual and economic exploitation, surrogacy, domestic violence, homelessness, motherhood, single parenting. This is not just Hagar's story anymore. This is the story of so many. Who in our society have we cast into the desert? Who in our town are invisible? The ones without a name, the ones we'd rather just keep hidden, out of sight. Perhaps they are the ones we only refer to by their social or economic status, or the ones that we call those people. Who do we judge harshly? God hears the cries of them all. The man sitting in his cell at St. Louis County Jail, he's not just a prisoner. The mother who buys her food with food stamps, she's not just one of the poor. The man who sleeps under the bridge in the graffiti graveyard is not just a homeless man. The family down the road, they're not just immigrants. The woman wearing a hijab is not just a Muslim. They are real human beings who feel deeply and who suffer. God sees them. God knows their names. Can we see them? couple months ago, the youth and I did a project called the 11th Commandment Project. We looked at the 10 commandments in the Bible. We talked about them, studied them a bit, and then thought, so if there was an 11th commandment, what might it be? And so I invite Sage Mattson to come on up. So we turned it into a contest, of course. And we invited the students to come up with an 11th commandment. Take a look at our 21st century and think, okay, so here's the original 10. Maybe, is something missing? Should we have something else that would really help us out about now? And the kids really came up with some great ideas. But, of course, we could only have one winner. And Sage Mattson, she won, and so she's going to read her 11th commandment that she wrote.
I think the 11th commandment should be that people should always accept everybody, no matter of race, religion, who they love, or gender identity. I think this should be the 11th commandment because our country is in a tough spot right now where it seems that America is discriminating against these people because of these reasons, and I really do not think that is fair.
President, I vote for Sage. We can learn a lot from our youth. So what happened to Hagar? We know that she went back to save Sarah and Abraham. She had to. She would have died in the desert. God knew that. God said, go back. I need to take care of you, and this is how I can do it. So she had a son named Ishmael, meaning God hears. And 14 years later, fast forward, Sarah gets pregnant, as God had promised. And she has a son, Isaac. Well, things get a little dicey. Sarah gets jealous. She doesn't like seeing the boys play together. And she says, this has got to stop. I don't want them here. Hagar and Ishmael got to go. And so Abraham cast them out into the desert once again. They wander in the wilderness. And when all their food and water are gone, Hagar puts her son under a bush and goes away, a bow shot away, so she doesn't have to watch him die. And she cries. And again, God shows up. God hears the cries of a slave girl. God hears the cries of a boy. God shows that God is not only with Isaac and Abraham and Sarah, the chosen ones. God cares about the outcasts, about Hagar and her son. She finds water, and she's protected, and Ishmael grows up. He marries an Egyptian woman, has 12 children, and becomes the father of a great nation. This is where the religion of Islam traces their roots. Muslims trace their heritage back to Abraham through Ishmael. We are all connected. The stories of the Bible show us that God doesn't just stay with the chosen ones. God sees the outcast child under the bush, in the desert, hears his mom weeping, and takes care of them. This message is not just about the people of the Bible. This message is for us. When we feel forgotten and lonely, when life has passed us by and all around us feels like a desert, and our dreams are over there dying under the bush. That's when we need to remember this old story. We need to know that God sees the tears of an outcast woman and an abandoned child, and God also hears us and sees us, sees our tears of joy and our joys of sorrow, and knows us by name. And hey, remember that boy who grew up in the mountains that didn't know who his dad was? Well, that one statement from the pastor literally changed his entire life. It's a true story. His name is Ben Hopper, who was elected twice the governor of Tennessee. He had led a successful and respected life, and he traces it back to that one comment from that pastor that day in the little church, who saw him for who he was, a human being, a child of God. You never know when your words, your actions, a smile might do for someone else. Just saying hello, giving a hug, calling somebody by name can make a huge difference. Amen.